From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the State Democratic Party calls for unity among rival factions in the Senate. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on potential unity in the party. And former State Assemblyman and New York Democratic Congressman Maurice Hinchey is laid to rest. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The State Democratic Party in New York, led by Governor Andrew Cuomo, is offering carrots and sticks to two rival factions of the Democrats in the state Senate in an effort to get them to reunite and potentially rule the chamber. We get more now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Leaders of the state's Democratic Party released a letter asking the 8-member breakaway Independent Democratic Conference in the Senate to reunite with the mainstream Democrats. They say in a time when President Trump and the Republican Congress are pursuing policies that may harm New York, to waste one more minute fighting each other is both unproductive and destructive. The letter also contains a threat. The Democratic Party leaders, including the state party chair and Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown and Queens Congressman Joseph Crowley, write that if the IDC refuses to accept the offer, then the state party is prepared to run primaries against the senators in the 2018 elections. Governor Cuomo, speaking in Syracuse, says he backs the request.
State party put a proposal on the table yesterday that I strongly support. And I urge both sides to stop their intramural disputes and unify.
Both the IDC and the mainstream Democrats, who have often exchanged bitter words, reacted positively. Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says mainstream Democrats are willing to enter a coalition and have long called for reunification of the two factions. IDC leader Jeff Klein said he's excited by the prospect and said he also wants the rest of the Democrats to adopt his group's policy agenda, including transgender rights and public financing for campaigns, items supported by many mainstream Democrats. One day later, the Democratic Party leaders agreed to those terms. The party leaders are not asking for reunification right away, though. The Democrats will only have 30 seats at the start of the session in January, not the 32 needed to actually take control of the chamber away from the ruling Republicans. Two current Democratic senators were elected earlier this month to new positions. They'll leave the Senate at the end of the year. The party leaders say they don't think the two seats will be filled by a special election until after the state budget is approved in early April. The left-leaning Working Families Party says that's too long to wait. Executive Director Bill Lipton says special elections could be held as early as March 13th, leaving more than 2.5 weeks before the budget's due.
Do we really want to live through yet another budget cycle with the Republicans in power, especially with Trump just doing these massive tax cuts for the 1% that are really going to result in just eviscerating the safety net and health care and education for working families across our country?
Cuomo, in his 7 years in office, has seemed content with the Republicans controlling the Senate with the help of the breakaway Democrats and Democrats running the Assembly. He's frequently touted his ability to work with both parties to achieve his goals. And in Syracuse, he repeated that claim.
Our mantra has been, and why we get the budgets done, you can be a Democrat, you can be a Republican, you're a New Yorker first, and act in the best interest of New York.
Lipton, with the Working Families Party, says Cuomo, who has tacitly backed the IDC in the past, now wants it both ways.
Going into a reelection year with Trump as president, he wants to, at the same time, put that chapter behind him. But he wants to do it after the budget because he would prefer to negotiate with the Republicans.
A spokesman for the Senate Republican, Scott Reif, says the Senate should focus on governing for now in its present structure and save the politics of the Democratic factions until later. And Reif hints that the unification of the two factions in the Senate might not mean much. He predicts that Republicans will gain seats in the 2018 elections and will have the numerical majority to continue to rule the Senate. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, the state Democratic Party, led by Governor Andrew Cuomo, offered carrots and sticks to two rival factions of Democrats in the state Senate, the so-called Independent Democratic Conference, in an effort to get them to reunite and potentially rule the chamber. And it looks like that unification will happen, but hold on, not till after the session.
Well, look, there are many people, I'm one of them, who think that Andrew Cuomo has been largely responsible for keeping the Republicans in power in the New York State Senate. One of the ways he did it was with this group of rogue Democrats. That's a term which is used commonly in the press now. I call them the, quote, traitors, who have gotten together with the Republicans, been rewarded with some committee chairmanship, some extra money, and have now been threatened because everybody's so fed up with them for keeping the Republicans in power that a lot of groups, a lot of liberal Democratic groups and others are saying, okay, time for primaries against all of them, including their leader, Jeff Klein. Andrew Cuomo, who wants to run for governor again, which he is going to do, he says, and wants to run for president, I don't think there's much doubt about that, is now putting together a plan with the Democratic Party in New York State, in which the so-called rogue Democrats, the eight of them, would come on as a third party, basically, but caucus not with the Republicans, which they've been doing to keep them in power, but with the Democrats, and would have presence at the meetings with the governor and everything else. To me, it's a half a loaf. I think they ought to get back in line and take their turns waiting to do leadership, but they're not going to do it. And this is the compromise which the governor has come up with. In my opinion, it's probably self-serving for the governor. And what he wants to do, obviously, is to have a break on the Senate Democrats. I don't think he respects them, and that's what the way that it's working now. So I'm simply thinking that this is going to happen. You are quite right in pointing out that not until the end of the session, and while a lot of things have to get done, that keeps the Republicans in power. So, as you say, let's just see whether this holds over to the next year of this legislative session.
Alan, Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, a Democrat, of course, known for her not-so-cozy relationship with Governor Andrew Cuomo, been rumored to run for that seat, perhaps in a primary against him. Well, a month ago, she said she would not run for a congressional seat held by Republican Representative John Katko, and things have changed. Miner, who leaves the office at the end of the year, says she's now considering a decision to run for that seat. The Republican there, of course, voted yes on the tax cut plan in Congress, and that's her primary reason for reconsidering.
You know, Stephanie Miner is one of my heroes. We've had her on our Capital Connection show, as you know, David, which you produce. And she is an extraordinarily courageous and very decent woman. I think her career has been one of being able to stand up to people who she considered to be misguided. And one of those people was Governor Cuomo, who she felt was not doing for her city what he ought to have been doing. It was met with fury. She was the head of the co-head of the Democratic Party in New York State, and he clearly wasn't happy with her. She doesn't have that job anymore, and I can only tell you, personally, I hope she runs, because the Republicans, especially the Republicans who are voting for the dismantling of health care, need to be told, no, this is not acceptable behavior. You don't get away with everything you want.
Finally, Alan, how about this? Of course, the famous expression, politics makes strange bedfellows. Governor Cuomo's bid for a third term got a boost from an unlikely source, former Republican U.S. Senator Al D'Amato, who says Cuomo hasn't raised taxes. I like that. He said he wouldn't raise taxes on millionaires. I like that.
Al D'Amato does what's best for Al D'Amato. We all know it. I've known him for years and years. Now he's a lobbyist. Obviously, the jingle and the jangle of silver coins means a great deal to him. And he goes where there is expediency on his part. He knows what He knows how to make friends in high places. I wouldn't make too much of it other than it's just Al D'Amato being Al D'Amato.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The use of body cameras by police has become a major issue in many communities across New York and the country. To that end, the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look now at the city of Schenectady, which is beginning the process of outfitting police officers with body cameras.
On Monday, the Schenectady City Council voted to accept a $165,000 grant, along with a local match, for cameras and equipment to outfit the Electric City's 154 officers. The department is now considering camera options and trying to determine policy. By the end of February, a handful of officers are expected to begin field testing different makes and models. Assistant Chief Michael Sieber.
There are a lot of new systems on the market. Technology keeps on changing, and as it changes, it offers different variety of cameras, different types of recordings, and downloading and storage of the data. So we are going to look at as many as needed, but definitely probably upwards of six or eight different systems to really get a system that is compatible with what we want, and mainly with the storage capability and the availability to research the data quickly, as well as produce it in a redacted form if necessary, and or for the courts.
In addition to product evaluation, Sieber says there are many questions surrounding the legality of body cameras.
Mostly when we enter someone's home, obviously you've got the right to privacy. There are certain things that we would not want to expose on a victim's house or even suspects for that matter. So we're going to look at a lot of, going to look at the laws and see how it is applicable to the policy that we write.
Sieber believes body cameras will serve as a tool of trust between police officers and the community.
A picture's worth a thousand words. In this case, we can document the incident both from an investigative standpoint, and if there is a personnel complaint, obviously we can quickly establish if there's right or wrong doings on a particular call. So it puts quick closure on it, which also helps the officer as well as any type of complaints we receive.
The rollout of body cams is not following a strict timetable.
We want to make sure we experiment with as many cameras as we can to make sure we get the right technology, research the laws, make sure we write a solid policy that's acceptable in court and protects people's rights. We're hopeful by the end of next summer, early fall, to roll it out department-wide.
Meantime, after 2 years of preparation, the Albany Police Department body camera program went live in early November, thanks to a $133,000 grant through the Bureau of Justice Assistance. APD solicited community input with a series of meetings and forums that helped draft policy. 20 officers on the force tested 4 different brands of cameras during a pilot program to determine the best option. The department selected the Axon Body 2 model. Acting Chief Robert Sears.
We're going to be doing a very slow and methodical implementation process so as not to overwhelm the system and or our IT infrastructure to make sure that everything is up and running as we implement this moving forward.
They're phasing in the cams 10 officers at a time. Sears says the Axons are lightweight and very unlikely to restrict officers' movements.
It was very user-friendly, and it just scored the highest out of all of our survey categories.
But Sears admits the devices are not perfect.
They're not going to solve every problem that we think they're going to solve, but I truly believe that they will help for accuracy of things.
Sieber expects his agency will have an advantage in establishing body camera protocol, as the Albany Police Department will share with Schenectady resources and information it gathered leading up to the deployment of the body cameras.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Over the course of the year, controversy has flared over Iowa Pacific Railway and its subsidiary, the Saratoga North Creek Railroad, storage of rail cars in the Adirondacks. The Adirondack Council is now asking billionaire philanthropist Warren Buffett to intervene. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Saratoga North Creek Railway leases part of its line from Warren County and reports to county officials its activities along that portion of the tracks. The remainder of the line is owned by the railroad. In September, the railway reported to supervisors its plan to store old rail cars on tracks between Warren and Essex counties. Then in October, 28 58-foot-long used tanker cars were parked on siding near the Northwoods Club Road in the town of Minerva and will remain there until they are once again needed. At the time, Governor Andrew Cuomo was asked what he thought about the railroad's actions.
They own the track, so they believe they have the right to store their trains on their track in the Adirondacks. It is unsightly. It's out of character with the Adirondacks. We don't own the tracks. There's a question as to what legal right we have to oppose it. But we oppose it 100%, and we are going to do everything we can do to stop the owner from storing the trains on those tracks.
About 70 tanker cars are now stored on rail sidings near the Boreas River and Upper Hudson River in the Adirondacks. The day before Thanksgiving, the Adirondack Council sent a letter to Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett, asking him to intervene and remove his company-owned and any subsidiaries' rail cars. Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway says they followed the money.
In looking into the ownership, we and others were able to discern that most of the cars are owned by various companies that are part of Berkshire Hathaway. And knowing Warren Buffett and the Berkshire Hathaway reputation, we thought that this seemed like something that he probably did not know about, and that if he knew about the Adirondacks and what a national treasure it is, he would probably direct that these cars be stored somewhere else. So that's why we've contacted him.
Janeway does not know if Buffett is familiar with the situation or with the Adirondacks. He believes the odds are good the billionaire philanthropist will take action.
This storage of cars was happening in Chicago, and when people reached out to the company owning the cars and went around Iowa Pacific, those cars were moved in 2 days. So we think this is a very realistic and smart strategy to be doing. It does not stand on its own. It is combined with other legal actions that are being looked at.
Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth says this strategy could work, but he also cautions that even if Berkshire Hathaway pulls rail cars out, Iowa Pacific may find other companies willing to replace the cars.
The only long-term strategy for keeping rail cars out of the Adirondacks on the Iowa Pacific is to, one, if they block the main line, because they put so many cars on the main line, they can only store about 270 cars on the sidings that they have. But if they go beyond that number, they're going to have to start putting the derelict railroad cars on the main line south from Tahawus. When that happens, it's no longer an interstate railroad, and the federal preemption no longer protects their activity. And that means that basically New York State government can use its legal tools to get them out of there.
The Adirondack Council sent the letter via FedEx on November 22nd and has not yet received a reply. The council's website has a template so individuals can also send personalized letters.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A few hundred mourners attended this week's funeral mass in Saugerties for former New York Congressman Maurice Hinchey. Hinchey, who had suffered from a rare neurological disorder, died a week ago at the age of 79. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
The Mass at St. John the Evangelist Roman Catholic Church drew friends and family along with former and current elected officials. They were there to honor the former Democratic State Assemblyman and Congressman, described as a man devoted to the public, his family, and the Yankees. Ulster County Executive Mike Hine attended.
His legacy is going to be one of caring and love and courage.
Hinchy is being remembered as an environmental champion. He authored the act that created the Hudson River Valley Greenway. Hinchy also is the lead sponsor of the nation's first acid rain law. Again, Hine.
On a very personal note, we're laying to rest a dear friend. Not just a dear friend for me personally and a mentor, but a dear friend to each and every citizen of the state of New York, and I think all Americans. Someone who stood for integrity, who stood up for what he believed in, was courageous and would not hesitate to speak truth to power, and also someone who understood the importance of protecting our environment for future generations.
At least two former New York congressional representatives attended the service, New York Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul and Mike McNulty, who represented New York's 21st District. Hinchy served in the state assembly for 18 years, including 14 as chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee. He then served in Congress for 10 terms, retiring in 2013. Hinchy is also known for his work against the dumping of toxic waste by organized crime. Fred Isaacs is a retired Middletown High School teacher who taught television journalism.
I started getting involved in investigating organized crime in landfills, and it was all thanks to Congressman Hinchy, who at that time was an assemblyman. He was looking at landfills in Orange and Rockland County. We had one near our school that we were interested in, and he came in, held hearings, and he continued to work at it and became a role model for my students and for me for years.
In fact, in 1997, his students produced a documentary about organized crime and corruption in the toxic waste hauling industry. Garbage, Gangsters, and Greed was screened at the Woodstock Film Festival. Duke Devlin, a recently retired sight interpreter for Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, says he met Hinchy many, many years ago.
And he was for the people. He was for the people. He's a great guy, and it's a great loss.
Assemblyman Kevin Cahill was one of the pallbearers, and State Department of Environmental Conservation Police Honor Guard stood in formation. Following the service, there was a private burial on the grounds of the Catskill Interpretive Center, a facility Hinchy worked for more than 30 years to create. Jeff Centerman is executive director.
We couldn't think of a better place and a more fitting place to help spread his message and continue his legacy.
The Hinchy family released a statement saying, quote, "The Catskill Interpretive Center was a major part of Maurice's life for so long that we found it fitting to be Maurice's last home," end quote. The Maurice D. Hinchy Catskill Interpretive Center opened in 2015 and is a partnership between the nonprofit Catskill Center for Conservation and Development and the state DEC. It serves as the visitor center for the Catskill Park. Centerman says there will be a ceremony unveiling a headstone in the spring, and the public will then be able to visit the gravesite, which is some 150 yards from the center's entrance, amid pine and birch trees. Again, Isaacs.
It's an end of an era. He stands as the exact opposite of what we seem to have now. He was a selfless man who seemed to be absolutely dedicated to the projects that he worked on. And as people said inside, he was idealistic, but he was also passionate. And he led with his heart, and he knew what was right and what was wrong and followed it. He didn't equivocate. And that's what we loved about him.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1748, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.